Well, hello, friends, and welcome to Season 4 of The Bitchery of History. Today, you're going to be listening to the live episode we recorded at the Complex on Santa Monica, right here in Los Angeles, California. As you heard last week, this was part of a two-part special night with It's Personal called Bitches Get Personal. Before I drop you into that episode, though, a few notes of housekeeping. As always, please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search The Bitchery of History and we should pop up. We have a new URL for our website. No longer is it umpboh.com. It is now thebitcheryofhistory.com. You'll notice, just like we do every season, we have new logo artwork designed by the incredibly talented artist Lauren Sirzan. And for season 4, I should mention that episodes will now be every other week starting October 1st. So the first episode will be October 1st, second episode, October 15th, October 29th, and so on and so forth. As always, we're welcome to your suggestions for women we should reach out to for The Bitch Next Door, as well as women that you think we should cover on the show itself. We are so excited to be back.
Yeah!
No, I'll knock the microphone over. That's
going to
be no good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Bitchery of History. Yeah. So this is the first episode of Season 4, Season 4, Episode 1. My Woo-hoo! Name is Max.
I'm Allison.
And today, I'm talking about Grace O'Malley.
Wow.
A pirate.
I'm excited.
From the 16th century. It's going to be amazing.
Yes. I am going to be talking about Jean de Clisson.
Okay.
A pirate from the 1300s. Get ready.
It's a pirate episode.
Yeah! All right, guys. We're going to go way back. So far back, we don't really know when she was born. A lot of the information about her life is fairly sketchy because it's the 1300s and people don't know how to write things down.
Records don't hold up.
Nope. So, she was born probably around the year 1300 in Breton under the name Jean-Louise de Belleville, Dame de Montague. But we are just...
Like from Romeo and Juliet.
I mean, I didn't say that, but okay. But I'll just call her Jeanne for the remainder of the episode because that name is too long. She was the daughter of a wealthy and influential nobleman, so maybe sure. The Montagues. He was Maurice IV of Belleville Montague. Now, at the age of 12, she married her first husband, Geoffrey de Chateaubriant.
It's a different time.
And she had... very much. She had two children with him. Now, he actually dies in 1323, so then she remarries. Now, either she remarries immediately then to Olivier III de Clisson, or she may have had another marriage in between to this guy named Guy, literally Guy. But that marriage was annulled mainly because Guy's family didn't like her or trust that their lands were going to be, like, in good hands she married into the blood.
They didn't like her?
So they had the marriage investigated, like, and then annulled by the Pope, and they made him marry someone else from to form a better alliance, because that's what women were for.
Sure.
So anyway, whether or not she marries Guy first, she does end up married to Olivier, and things are going pretty well, but there's some typical medieval stuff, you know, fighting over the succession of land.
Sure.
So the Breton War of Succession, if you don't know, it was all about who was going to control Brittany. Now, Brittany is the northwest of France. It's not Britain. Don't get confused, because I had to Google it because I was confused. So Olivier goes, we're going to side with the French. That makes sense. We're in northwest France. Let's side with the French king.
Makes sense.
But his town falls anyway in this battle because war is hard and they lost and the English won. That's what I wrote in my notes. Because war is hard. So the king of France decides that the real reason that Olivier couldn't hold the town is because he's secretly fighting for the English, and he let them win. So Olivia gets summoned with a bunch of other knights by King Philip of France, and he doesn't like any of these knights, and they have basically a mock trial. It's not even real. And he goes, yeah, you're all guilty traitors secretly fighting for the English. And he beheads all of the knights, including Olivier, and displays their heads on the wall.
That's a very early form of fake news.
Yes. Now, from previous episodes, people might remember, don't ever mess with husbands or boyfriends of strong women because they will literally buy a tank and fight you.
Yes. That was Maria Oktyabrskaya.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She had a boyfriend killed and said, well, I'm going to buy a tank and fight in the army with my tank.
Yep.
So don't do it. Just don't. She does the next best thing. Tanks haven't been invented yet, obviously. Sure. So Jian brings her kids to see the head of their father, very Game of Thrones, and is basically like, look at this. Yep, not going to stand. I'm not cool with this. So she swears retribution against the French king, Philip, and Charles de Blois. And she rightly considered their murders to be very cowardly and pretty sketch.
Well, yeah. We're talking about mock trials here.
Yeah, so she sells all of her lands, all of her belongings, takes all of this money, and goes to the English king, Edward III, and is like, we weren't on your side, but now we are, and I have all of this money, and I want to buy some ships, so do you want in? And he's like, yeah, sign me up. Okay. So she gets three warships, paints all of them black.
Yes.
Red sails, because style, you guys. And she goes pirating against the French in the English Channel for 13 years.
Yes.
13 freaking years. She names her flagship My Revenge. Yeah. The ships of this black fleet patrol the English Channel, hunting down French ships, whereupon her force would kill the entire crew except one person.
Yeah.
They would leave one person alive to go and tell the French
king. Yeah, you gotta send a message.
Yep. So this is when she earned the moniker, the Lioness of Brittany.
Yes. What a name.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, according to some reports, she personally decapitated all high-value prisoners with an axe before tossing their bodies into the sea.
Sure.
So like I said, don't mess with them. She is also said to have attacked coastal villages in Normandy and put several to sword and fire. So just decimating them.
So she roll the ships up
and
then get off and do battle on land as well?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, after the sinking of her... Well, women are great at multitasking, so obviously.
I mean, it's true.
After the sinking of her flagship, her Jian and her two sons were adrift for 5 days. Her one son actually died of exposure in the middle of this, like, 5-day...
My Revenge sunk?
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry.
Yeah.
Revenge is a dish best served cold?
What?
A ship best sunk? I don't know. Anyway, Jeanne and her other son, Olivier, were finally rescued, and they were taken by some Montfort supporters. Again, this is the Middle Ages. Everybody's supporting everybody else. If you haven't watched Game of Thrones, just assume it's very incredibly complicated, and we're not going to get into it now.
Everyone supported one person until they paid them enough money to support someone else.
Right, or someone shows up and is like, I got money. Want to give me some ships? Mm-hmm. Hey-o. So her quest for revenge continued with the same intensity even after King Philip died in 1350. But she finally calmed down, married a third or a fourth time to Walter Bentley, one of the commanders in Edward's fleet. And she finally settled at the castle of Hennebont, a port town on the Brittany coast. And she died there in 1359.
Wow. That's amazing.
So there you go.
That's amazing.
The Lioness of Brittany.
I mean, truly, hell hath no fury.
Oh, zero.
Like a woman scorned. I mean, wow. Say her name one more time.
Her full name?
Sure, do it.
Okay, here we go. I just add some water. Jean-Louise de Belleville de Montagu de Clisson. I guess you just tacked the last
Clisson
part on the end.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Lioness of Brittany.
Yeah,
you know.
That's better.
There we go.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Of course.
That was a great story. So I'm going to tell the story of Grace O'Malley. We have a lot a lot of information on her, even though she comes from the 16th century, mostly because she is part of active Irish folklore.
Oh, man.
And so there is a lot of information that is not only, some of it is firsthand. In fact, we'll get to a part in the story where she actually meets Queen Elizabeth the First.
What?
And before meeting Queen Elizabeth the First, one of her courtiers gives her this sheet that has like 13 questions on it that literally says, who's your dad? Where do you live? What, like, do you do for a living? And we still have that in her own handwriting.
Whoa.
So, like, we have it from her. But then also, like, there are parts of this that are like, this might have happened. But also, it could just be a real cool story.
All right. Right? Let's go.
I also, real quick, before we get into it, want to talk about what politics was like in Ireland at this time. Mostly, the only real thing I want to get into is that there was no primogeniture at this time in Ireland. So, primogeniture is where... Right. Primogeniture means that when your dad died, the firstborn son gets all the land, right? You inherit the titles and the lands and
so
everything.
So there wasn't that.
There wasn't
so
that.
So women could inherit?
No.
Let's you not go me that right far. Up and let me just fall right down.
No. What happened, though, is that Ireland is basically ruled by a bunch of clans, and the head of a clan was elected... to lead that clan.
And could they elect women?
No.
I'm just checking.
And the boundaries of these areas where the clans were always up for grabs. So people were always killing people from other clans because, you know, if I killed you, then I could possibly take your land, take your castle, take your area, take your whatever. What this meant, though, and this is where it actually does help women, is that because the ties of blood were stronger than the ties of marriage, women were allowed to keep their dowry if they divorced. They could take everything back with them.
All right.
They could also buy and own property that was their own. Now, Grace O'Malley, or Grania, as the Irish is known, is born during the reign of King Henry VIII. Sometime in 1530, and she's born to the head of the O'Malley clan. They literally called this dude the O'Malley. Her mother's name is Maeve. And she's born in Clew Bay, County Mayo, which is essentially, it's like this big inlet, and there's a bunch of islands. And like most highborn children at her time, she was probably fostered out. So she does learn Latin. She learns to sail ships. She learns all these things. And then she goes, hey, Dad, next time you go out on a big voyage, I want to go with you. And they say, no. Absolutely not. She and the excuse they give her is your hair is so long it's gonna get caught in all the ropes. And she said,
what?
Okay, so she cut it all off.
Yes, queen. Yeah. Thank you.
So she cut it all off.
I was about to say, she there's stowed no away. Lying around. Come on.
I mean,
have you seen Milan?
That's what I experienced. It's like this real dramatic, and she gets it all. Just like in Milan. And she stowed away on her dad's ship as he sailed
she
off.
She stowed away?
She
wasn't like,
away.
Dad, I cut my hair, I can come? She
so
just
she
hid?
Cut her hair off, she got into the ship, waited for the ship to leave, and then while they're too far away to turn back, she's like, hello, Daddy, I'm here. And to his great credit, he let her be there.
I mean, what choice do you have?
I mean, fair.
The
only qualifier that he gave her was like, if we get invaded by pirates, which is very likely at this time, you have to go down below deck. There is one story,
fine.
And this is part of the...
But I'll go because I want to and not because you told me to.
Exactly. And she slams the door shut. Now, there is this one legend where they get attacked by pirates. The way down is blocked.
Of
so
course.
She goes up. Instead, she climbs the rigging where she sees her dad get like really badly wounded. And there's this dude like sneaking up on him from behind. And so she launches herself from the rigging and attacks this dude who's trying to attack her dad. And of course, this earns her the respect of literally everyone because we do have these tales of sailing on these ships for a while with these men who are like, they're not going to like her just because she's the chief's daughter. They're not going to complain, probably. Yeah, so eventually she does have to return and get married. You know, at this time, marriage is it's a woman's job to a certain extent. She gets married to this dude named Dunal O'Flaherty, who's the heir to the O'Flaherty clan.
That is a name.
Dunal. They have three kids together. Owen, who's known for being very kind and very sweet. Maeve, after her mother. And Muro, who's an asshole. And we'll get to him later. Yeah.
So it's those last born sons.
From what we can tell, it's like a really... Yeah, it's always the youngest who's the troublemaker. From what we can tell, this is a very conventional time in Grace's life. They're married for 19 years and we don't have much in the way of knowledge at this time. Until about 1564, 65, Dunal is killed. She's ambushed while he's out. It's one of my favorite moments. He's killed while out, not him dying, her, like what happens after.
Let's be clear.
He's killed, he's ambushed, and in revenge, all these people, they ambush him and kill him because they're fighting over this one castle called Cox Castle. And in the history, it's spelled C-O-C-K, not C-O-X, C-O-C-K Castle. Exactly. And we know this because once he's killed, they rush to the castle and try to take it over. But who's waiting for them but Grace? And she repels them so efficiently that they rename the castle to Hen's Castle. Forevermore, it is known for Hen's Castle.
No
from
way!
That moment on. Literally,
yep, that's
it's Hen's
my favorite
Castle.
Moment. Yep.
Exactly.
All right. I'm
so
on board.
A lot of stuff happens in this time. Elizabeth comes to power. And she starts doing more in Ireland than Henry ever did. So because of some political stuff that happens at this time, she actually has to leave the O'Flaherty lands because she's not able to...
Grace. Okay.
Has to leave the O'Flaherty lands because she's not able to stay there anymore, even though she'd basically been in charge with her husband had been in charge
right.
for 19 years. So
that
she packs
castle.
Up her... 1,000 head of her 1,000 cows and horses. She takes most of her husband's men, and she takes all of her dowry, and she goes back to her castle, to Clew Bay, exactly,
okay.
where she starts being a pirate.
Yes.
Yeah. So two of my favorite stories come from this time. So the first one is in between her time and her first and second marriage, what she starts doing is she starts going and basically collecting taxes from any of the ships that are coming from through Clew Bay. They'll board it. And if the boat is armed, then they say, okay, well, just give us money and we won't, like, have a big fight. And if the boat's not armed, they say, give us all your stuff. And then, but in this time, they on her way to church, she finds out about a shipwreck. And they, of course, turn around from church and go to the shipwreck. And she finds this dude who's still alive from the shipwreck and
what?
Goes, you're super hot. I'm going to take you as a lover. And then... They start being in love. And one of the other clan members go, dude, you're not gonna be in love with an English person, so they kill him. And so
what?
Right, so and then Grace goes, okay, and goes to Duna, the castle at Duna, which is where this clan was,
yeah.
kills all of them, burns the castle to the ground. She gets a new nickname. She's now known as the Dark Lady of Duna from this point on. Yeah.
About messing with ladies' dudes.
Literally.
Don't!
My other favorite story from this time is she goes, at this point, she comes across this one castle named the House Castle. And the guy who's in charge of this castle closes the doors on her and doesn't let her in. And at this time, no matter what was happening between your two clans, if there were two chieftains meeting each other, you were supposed to open your doors and give them hospitality. It was like basically a slap in the face that this dude closed the doors on him. So Grace somehow gets a hold of the dude's grandson, rides off in the opposite direction, and runs off after her and goes, I'll give you as much money as you want. And she says, no. The ransom is you promise that forevermore you will always set an extra place at your table in case anyone comes and wants hospitality. And to this day, almost 540 years later, an extra place is always set at every single meal because
what?
Of Grace O'Malley.
I want to go eat yeah. that meal.
Yeah, that's amazing. So she marries a second dude named Richard Burke. And let's fast forward a little bit, shall we? They have a child named Tibbet Lalong, who, according to legend, is born at sea. Tibbet Nalong, who is born at sea. He's born on a ship, and then the next day, they're attacked by Algerian pirates, and Grace is downstairs. She hears that things aren't going very well, so she puts her baby down, comes up. Just picture this in your mind.
Okay.
This woman had just had a baby the day before. She's probably already super uncomfortable. And now she's pissed because her men can't take care of some pirates when this is literally all they do.
You have one job!
You have one job! And the sight, apparently, of Grace appearing at the top of the stairs with her sword is enough to rally her men and make the pirates flee in the opposite direction. It's amazing. So there's a war that happens at this time, and this is where we're going to fast forward. Richard, her husband, is named heir apparent to this province of Connacht. Lord Deputy Sir Henry visits and is like, dude, you're really cool, to Grace. And then Dudette. Grace, Dudette,
there's a
you're
lot of dudes
cool.
floating around. I gotta keep track.
Grace sets off to plunder Desmond.
So she's back to pirating.
She's back to pirating.
Copy.
With the Lord's permission. Desmond captures her.
Okay.
Gives her to the castle at Dublin, which is under control of England.
Okay.
As like a, hey, look how cool I am. I love you so much. And then she's transferred and then she's released. And no one's really sure why. A bunch of people are all at war over this one period of Connacht. Political stuff happens. Grace and Richard show up to a battle with 2,000 men.
Okay.
They force the English to give them the title. And now Grace is Lady Burke. And she's part of the English nobility. And still a pirate.
What?
So that's fast forward. A lot of stuff happened. Now, this is really where all the trouble, like, after all of this has happened, there's, like, the most important part of Grace's life comes into effect. And this is...
So now we're starting Act Two?
The trouble with Richard Bingham. Now, Richard dies of
Richard
natural
Burke.
Causes. Yes,
Richard
her
Burke.
Husband dies
okay.
of natural causes. She keeps...
There's a lot of dicks floating around
it's
now, too.
It's a lot
I
of them.
I don't know.
It's a lot. So Richard dies of natural causes. Because of English law, she gets to keep a third of their estates because she is Lady Burke. Because of Irish law, she gets to keep all of her land that she brought into the marriage. So she's now 53 years old. She has a huge number of people. She has a ton of livestock and a ton of land. But then in comes Richard Bingham and Sir John Perrot. And they're both put in charge of this area of Ireland. They both
okay.
have very different ideas of how this area should be governed.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
John Perrot goes, let's talk to them. Let's figure out a deal. Let's all just be peaceful about this. And Richard Bingham is quoted as saying, the Irish are never tamed with words, but with swords. So you can see where this is going. So Grace's son is captured by Bingham. Bingham stabs him 12 times and goes, he was trying to escape. And Grace goes, I don't believe you. I'm at war with you now. Perrot is dispatched to capture her and actually seizes all of her property and her. But then they release her to this man named Richard Burke.
Richard, wait.
Who is her son-in-law? And I don't Whoa. Know what John Perrot was thinking. Like, did they not know what her husband's name was before?
As soon as she goes to her son-in-law, Richard Burke, he lets her go.
Exactly.
Okay.
And she flees. Until Bingham is called away, and she comes back to Ireland and says, hey, Perrot, you want to give me a pardon? And Perrot goes, sure, and pardons her and all of her family. So,
what?
Like, what is John Perrot up to?
I swear, that just felt like an episode of, I don't know, CSI, where it's like, wow, why did we have that episode?
I mean, that's
Everything, the status quo is the exact same. So it kind of feels like The Last Jedi.
So Grace... I don't get that reference.
Yeah, we'll have to have a long talk later then.
Grace and Perrot draw up charges against Bingham. They send him to England. Bingham gets charged with a bunch of crimes, gets brought back to England, put on trial, and then acquitted of everything, and comes back to Ireland pissed. Heads straight for Grace, seizes all of her land, burns her castle to the ground, stations... ships in her harbor. So Grace goes, okay, well, I'm going to complain to your boss. And she writes a letter to Queen Elizabeth, who says, okay, why don't you fill out these questions and we'll see what happens. So Grace says, okay, I'm going to fill out these questions. And she sails up the Thames and meets with Elizabeth. Imagine this meeting between Grace O'Malley, this fearsome pirate, and Elizabeth I, this like wild and crazy queen who has never married, is like the patron of William Shakespeare. She is feared. They're used to being obeyed. Apparently, they find a knife on Grace while they're in Elizabeth's presence. And Elizabeth goes, let her keep it. What do I care? I'm not worried about this woman.
And that is how women should respect each other.
Literally. And for all we know, apparently Grace really impressed her, because not only does Elizabeth give her a full pardon for all of the crimes that she and her family committed, except one. At one point, remember Murrow, the asshole?
Yeah.
He joins with Bingham in the fight against Grace. And Grace goes, that's not going to stand, and burns down her own son's land and takes all of his herd and property and says, okay, well, now you're done. You're done. I'm done with you. And Elizabeth goes, this is the quote. She hath it sometimes lived out of order. And the only crime she charges her with is burning down her own son's property. Yeah.
A mom's got to do what a mom's got to do.
The last thing she does, Elizabeth does, is gives Grace a letter signed in her own hand that Grace is to deliver to Bingham that says, you are required to protect Grace O'Malley and her children, to live in protection forever. Bingham is pissed, obviously, and he stations troops with her. So basically she has to feed them and pay them. So Grace writes another letter to Elizabeth. Elizabeth says, okay, dude, come back. She charges them. He goes to jail. And that's literally the last thing we ever hear of Grace O'Malley.
What?
It's like, yeah, we don't know when she died. We know sometime in the next 6 years. But the arrest of Bingham the second time is the last thing we ever hear from any of them.
I'm going to just say,
let's Grace, make up her ending.
Then sailed off to New Zealand, met up with some cool vampires there, and she's still kicking it in New
she's
Zealand.
She's still alive.
With some vampires. That's what I'm saying.
That's it. That's Grace O'Malley.
Yeah. So don't ever let anybody tell you that pirates are only men, because these are only two pirates. We've covered a lot on our show, and there are some crazy stories.
Exactly.
Now, for the next part of our show, we're going to be doing our segment Bitch Next Door, we like to call it, where we interview awesome women that are doing cool things in their life and just in the world.
Yes.
So I am going to bring on stage Nikki Boyer, a fantastic actress and friend. I just met her working on a film in Madison.
Come on.
Three-time Emmy winner. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Oh, do I hold this thing? Do I hold this?
Oh, you can leave it
it is. I have to do this?
No, you don't. You can sit back and it'll pick you up.
No, really? It'll pick me up?
It will.
That's a fancy microphone. Hi. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm so... You guys are really smart. I'm like watching this. I'm like, you guys know a lot about these bitches. Like, you bring them to life. I feel like I'm part of their world. You know, I'm just impressed.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, our interviews are always really chill, super casual. So, why don't you start? One of our favorite questions that we like to ask people is just like, who are some of your inspirations? Who inspires you in your life?
Who inspires me? Strong people. And I don't want to say strong women, because we're in this world where, with the bitchery of history, it's all about women. But I do believe that, like, just strong people that give you tools in your life that show you how to navigate the difficult stuff. So my first boss that I had was when I was, like, 15 years old, and I was working back in St. Louis, and I was hosting a kids' show. And I was doing live television. I had no clue what I was fucking doing. I had no clue. I was like wearing an earpiece and I was like, someone's talking to me in my ear and I'm doing live television. I was learning how to do that while there were two really amazing women in my life that were sort of coaching me. And it was a woman named Lois and a woman named Susie. And I will never forget them. I was like 14 or 15 learning the ropes of live television. And these two strong, amazing women that were very forgiving, because you make a lot of mistakes when you're 14 and 15 years old. They were very forgiving, and they just sort of lifted me up. And I would love to say, you know, some grandiose women that, like, are in history, but these two women from St. Louis, Missouri, who just put some work into me and put some hope and a little bit of, like, they inspired me. I have to say, those two girls, like, rocked my world. They were
sweet.
Awesome. Yeah,
wow. I love that answer.
Thanks.
I don't think... You know, inspirations or heroes have to always be like Oprah and
Maya. I was like, should I say Rosa Parks? Rosa Parks. I was like, no.
Yeah. I mean, yes.
I mean,
also,
Rosa Parks inspires me, but I'm, you know, I'm not a little black girl. I never met her. She did amazing things, but when it comes down like to the fabrics of your life, I think there are women that inspire you globally, and then there are women and people that inspire you like
exactly
personally.
Who touched your life and directed you in a way that helped to shape you. You know, going kind of off of that, you know, you've done a lot of really amazing things.
Oh,
I mean,
thanks.
According to your biography, you
it's all phony, and I made it all up.
But I mean, like, you were at one point the most watched woman on the internet.
I was, which you would think that would go down a different road, but it didn't. It was all very good
natured. And so, like, my question is, like, for all of this, you know, we're living through this moment in Hollywood where we're trying to figure out, you know, where women's places and what it's like to be a woman in Hollywood. And I was wondering what your experience was like, you know, having that much exposure on the internet. Does that change the way that you experience things on the internet? Do people experience you in a different way?
I think when I first jumped into it, it was very new. Like, the internet world was new. And I was hosting a show for Yahoo called Daytime in No Time, where I just basically recapped all the crazy daytime moments that happened. And we were generating all of these clicks and these views. Like, I think to this date, I think 700 million people clicked on my show, which maybe today doesn't seem like a lot. But back then, when we first started,
like
it was a lot.
It still seems like a lot. Okay, it seems like a lot.
So when I say I'm the most watched woman on the web, it always feels a little gratuitous because you never know really what that means. But a lot of people clicked on my show. And a lot of it was people just wanted to know what was going on in daytime TV. But people were also attracted to, like, the person that's telling you the information. So that was me. And I don't think I really understood the gravity of what that meant. So I got a lot of accolades and people loving me and saying, you're so funny, you're so wonderful. And then I also got people that were like, I want to slit your throat. Like, I can't stand you. And
Jesus.
I was like, wait, what? Like, I had literally two different worlds happening at the same time where I was like absorbing all of this information and learning what the internet kind of meant way before we all knew what the internet was. But I'm grateful for it. It was a really interesting experiment. It was interesting to know how you can inspire people and enrage people at the same time, which I kind of love. Like, I love a troll. Like, if you want to troll me on the internet, like, bring it. Like, I find that fascinating. And I also found that in the internet world, people have a certain amount of confidence when they're typing. But when you meet them in person or you address them on the internet and you say directly, hey, at imanasshole.com, or hey, I'm a jerk, you say, hey, I heard that you said this. What did you really mean? And then once you kind of address them on a personal level, they kind of soften. Mm. And they kind of say, hey, I didn't really mean that. And I probably shouldn't have said that. So I've learned through the internet world, if you kind of address people on a personal level and you kind of call them out maybe a little bit, but also say, hey, I hear you, I see you, they kind of soften. And it's an interesting dynamic to be in the internet world. It's interesting. I'm not gonna lie.
No, I like that. I like that a lot. Because I think always, you know, people always say everybody's going through their own battles. They're fighting their own things. So you can't always start bringing that baggage along with you and start, you know.
Yeah.
Don't assume anything.
It also sounds like great just life advice in general. Like, don't be afraid to call people out lightly.
Right. Call people out lightly.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for your advice. Thanks for telling me you want to slit my throat. But maybe you shouldn't slit my throat.
Please don't.
Maybe we should hang on and have a coffee. Like, once you say that, I mean, I literally had a guy say, I don't know, I made a political comment, which was actually written by a writer of mine. And this is a good lesson in the entertainment world, is like, sometimes you let your writers kind of tell you as a host or an actress what you're going to say. And sometimes you have to say, wait. This is my face and my voice. And at the time, I just sort of took what the writer said and regurgitated it. Granted, I agreed with what he said, but I hadn't really absorbed, like, what does this mean for me? Which is a lesson for women overall in the industry to, like, be like, hold on, what does this mean for me? And I said it, and then I got a death threat, multiple death threats of a guy that wanted to wait out in my bushes of my house that he knew where I lived and slit my throat. And I was like, hey, dude, maybe we shouldn't slit each other's throats. Maybe we should just, like, agree to disagree. And he actually happened to soften and say he was sorry and apologize.
Wow.
And then I called the police. And then I was like, hey, Sony wants to slit my throat. But it was just a really interesting moment.
I mean, I don't blame you for that movement.
No.
Right?
There are some things you can't take.
We would all do that, I hope. He seems chill, but I don't know.
Right?
Just in case.
Catch him on a bad night with too many cocktails and he's got a knife. You never know. My point is that people just want to be heard and they want to be seen. And sometimes you have to sort of get rid of the anger and the frustration and just say, I hear you and I see you and I understand where you're coming from.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's so weird.
No, it's weird.
It's not weird.
It does not sound weird. It's great, great life advice and something that we should all try to do more, especially me, because Anyone that listens to the podcast knows I'm a judgmental Slytherin, so it's fine.
No, you're not.
Yeah, that was a great fake laugh, guys. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Because you've been working in the industry as well since 14 or 15, apparently, or even longer.
It's
I'm
like
not
six
sure.
years. I've been working like 6 years.
It's very recently. Only in this very short amount of time have you had like projects that have been your favorite to work on, or projects that you've learned the most on, or that have challenged you the most?
Yeah, I think my first job in television, which was hosting the Kids Club Hour at the WB affiliate, was when I learned the most. I learned what live television meant. I learned what it meant to have somebody in your ear talking to you, and what it meant to, like, you know, you have 60 seconds to say these seven sentences, get it done, with 15 kids around you. And I was like, what? I was like, it's my first job. And then I flash forward to when I moved to LA and I made the move to be an actress and came out here, and then I worked at Yahoo. That was an amazing experience for me because I learned the world of the internet. And then in terms of acting, I did a film called Coyote County Loser a long time ago. But it was my first independent film where I got to be the lead. And there's nothing like learning all of your acting lessons while you're on camera at the same time, where you're like, oh, there, my eye line is here, but I'm looking over there. Like, I literally learned all my lessons while shooting a movie. And I, when I watched the movie back, which, by the way, is only available on YouTube in Russian, when I watched that back,
was
I'm
it
like,
shot in Russian?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was, but for some reason, it's only available in Russian.
Great.
I know, big time. when I watched that back, I see the lessons that that I learned in real time while shooting it. And then I just did a movie with this young, lovely person here. Al and I did a movie called Famish recently that we shot in Madison, Wisconsin, which was on, like, we shot it during an anime convention, sort of run and gun. It was very intense, and it was, I learned a lot of lessons on that movie, and it was really awesome to sort of have a family for 6 days where you're like, we're going to shoot this many pages in this many days. It was crazy. Even at, I'm 43. I've been doing this since I was like 12
years
old.
Wait, that's more than 6 years.
Yeah. I've been doing this for a really long time. And I have to say, no matter how old you are, how long you've been doing it, you're constantly learning lessons.
Absolutely.
Not only about the business, but about like yourself and how you're wired and your insecurities and how much of an asshole you can be, but how great you can be and how much you can step up to the plate.
All great. There was no asshole ever.
No, but like, you know, when you're an asshole in your own mind and you're like battling your own demons and figuring things out, but you get really like, I don't know. It causes you to, I don't know. This business causes you to like step up in ways that maybe you wouldn't have to in other other venues.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's a part of living in LA. It's just like the best and worst place you could possibly
live. Totally. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. So what are you looking forward to in the future? You know, you're talking about learning a lot about yourself. Are you hoping that it'll take you in new directions? Is there something that you haven't done that you really want to do?
I'd like to sleep. a lot more.
Amen.
I have to say, at my age and being, which I sound like I'm 75 and I'm like, oh, my age. But at my age and doing it for the last 30 years, I'm kind of welcoming new experiences, but also some peace. And I say that not sounding like, oh, this business, but I just kind of want to be calmer and not be constantly looking for approval from other people. Which this business can kind of, that can happen in this business. But I think it's also, it makes us as people really accountable for things. So I think in the future, I'd like to do projects that make me feel peaceful. I would like to start doing maybe something in the world that makes a different kind of a difference. I don't know. I'm kind of babbling, but I feel like, I don't know, like, some charity work and some giving back and maybe making films about things that aren't so egocentric and about me and about actors, but like making movies that can potentially ripple and change perspectives.
Yeah.
I don't know, with the sort of way the world is going right now politically, and I think I would like to make a bigger statement than maybe I have made in the past. I don't know what that looks like, and I think we all probably think about that, But I would like to do that. I don't know what that looks like, but I would like to help people.
So the kind of like the last question that we normally ask all of our guests is, do you have any like advice or a word of wisdom that you'd like to give give to the world?
Yeah. Be okay with making mistakes. Be okay with speaking your mind and setting some boundaries. And also be okay with, how do I say this? Constantly, like once you think you've got it figured out, you really don't have it figured out. Like, you're like, I got this. And then being okay with continually growing and changing and figuring things out. Because, I mean, I'm in a relationship with a wonderful guy. I have two great stepkids. I have a career that's going pretty well. But I'm still like, what am I doing? Like, what's happening? So I think be really patient with yourself and just be okay with making mistakes, because life is just kind of a glorious, it really is a glorious stage where you just get to fuck up all the time. Hmm. It really is.
Amen.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that you work on, real quick, do you want to give a plug for your podcast?
Yes. Oh, sure. Thank you.
Of course.
Yeah, thanks. I host a co-host a podcast called Straight Talk with Ross. You can find it at straighttalkwithross.com, and we're also at Hello Ross Pod on Instagram. It is a very fun, sort of a variety show meets real life podcast. We have a blast. And then I also have another podcast that's super deep and dark and twisted. Because I feel like you have to have balance in your life. It's called Dying for Sex, Dying for, with the number 4, sex, which sounds super porny, but it's not. I swear to God. And that's about my friend, one of my best friends, who is terminally ill with breast cancer, and how she is sort of, she and I, as best friends, are balancing sort of her discovery of her sexuality and her timeline of life. And it's super interesting and very honest. So I have something that's, you know, super dark and twisted, like Dying for Sex and interesting. And then, you know, Straight Talk with Ross, which is super fun. And we'll be in San Francisco next weekend, if anybody's going to be there, doing a live podcast on Sunday. So, yay!
Awesome. Awesome.
I love you guys, by the way. I love this podcast. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
This
Thank
was
you for
really
being
fun.
Here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you want to hang out while we do our cause of the week?
Yes, I love that. Yes.
Fantastic.
All right. Yeah.
So at the end of every single episode, we decide a cause that we want to support and we want to direct our listeners to. And this week, just like It's Personal is supporting NARAL, we are also going to support NARAL. So a little bit of information on them. They were established in 1977 in order to provide a policy and educational component to the work of their sister organization, which is NARAL Pro-Choice America, which is actually the political arm of their organization. And what they do is they fight against anti-choice attacks. They educate about issues affecting reproductive freedom. They organize, mobilize, and grow activists and supporter base. And they shift the cultural discourse around abortion access, specifically and reproductive rights generally. And you can find them at prochoiceamerica.org.
Yay!
Yes.
Also vote. Go vote.
Oh my God. Please vote. Please vote. Vote. So our thank yous. Thank you so much, Nikki Boyer, for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to me babble.
Thanks to Liz and Riley and all of
yes.
the whole It's Personal.
Can we have one
team?
More round of applause for It's Personal? Woo! As always, a shout out to the most amazing team that we could possibly ask for. That is Kim, who's sitting right there.
Jess.
Who's sitting right there. Sydney, who I is sitting right there.
Somewhere.
And Jeanette, who's sitting in San Francisco.
Do you want to do our sign off with us?
Okay, what's your sign off?
Let me see. Bitches get stuff done.
Okay, I like that.
Ready?
And as always,
bitches get stuff done.
That's it. Thank you so much.